Welcome to the 2-4, our first post-game episode of the entire season. Zach Vanoss with you. I may or may not have Sean with me due to heart attack syndrome.
Oh, God. It's hard to believe that we are one game into hopefully somewhere between 16 and 28 games.
Yeah, one game in, six years off our lives?
Yeah, no kidding. What a Jesus. Way to start the playoffs off. What a ridiculous game that was. So yeah, obviously we're coming at you the whole night, every Wednesday night.
I don't know.
Game one, Habs Lightning. Sorry for the delay. Didn't work out this weekend timing wise. And then we meant to do it last night, and then Zach went ahead and had no power.
I had no electricity, and I called Rob Ford, and I said, Rob, buddy, because he lets you call him up. He gives everyone his number. He's like, bring your SUV over, hook it up to my power inlet system that every house has, and we'll run it like that. But he did not come through on his political promise, so I'm very upset with Rob.
That's what did it for you?
Yeah, I was like, he's cool, you know, he likes to party. But once he didn't come through on his promise of even when the power's out, I'll come give you power personally, ruining your podcast opportunity. That's what exactly finally put it over. So yeah, here we are.
We meant to do this prior to the series starting. We're coming at you one game late, but kind of gives us more, not that there was a shortage of stuff to talk about, but gives us even more to talk about because that was a bonkers game.
What a game. I mean, let's get into this right here. Since we last cast, blah, 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 there's been one game in the playoffs, and that's what counts now, and the Habs won it in overtime. Dale Weiss, everyone's expected hero. Did anyone not have Dale Weiss scoring the game winner? But Jesus, what a game. I mean, the mirror image of what I expected to happen almost. Like, Montreal were the possession monsters in this game, completely dominated by the Habs. And somehow, still gets into overtime off, what are we going to call it? Weak goaltending?
But on Carey's part?
Yeah.
I don't know how you can call it anything else. I mean,
it wasn't great.
A few of them weren't his fault, but you know, whatever it ended up, 8.15 save percentage ain't going to cut it in the playoffs.
No, definitely not.
If it was that high.
There was a point where it was 7.50. I know that much.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It was very easy.
He upped that a bit in overtime. He played very well in overtime, actually.
He did.
But not Price's strongest game. Hopefully he kind of got that out of the system. But I mean, the obvious lesson, the only lesson you can really draw from game one is that it's a weird game, and it's an extremely small sample size, but Habs look very, very good. But they also showed some cracks there. And if Price is about to go into a bit of a tailspin, this could be a short series.
Could be, but I mean, on the other hand, Montreal managed to win this thing.
Yeah. I mean, they played great, and Price wasn't great, but you know, I'm not gonna hop on the Price can't get it done in the playoffs bandwagon quite yet. I think, I mean, would it shock anyone if he came out and had a 28 save shutout in game 2?
No, because like you said, I mean, he was pretty solid in overtime. Definitely questionable through the first 60 minutes of the game. But the biggest surprise, more so than maybe Price struggling, was the Canadiens just up and down were the better team, no question about it.
From the opening whistle right until the end, the Lightning had a little bit of a spurt there in overtime, where there was a couple instances where I thought the game was going to be over. They had some
heart
stretches,
attack-inducing.
And they were probably the better team for the last 5 minutes of the game, and I was just kind of waiting for that goal to go in, but Price played really well, and then it went back in the other end. We put on some sustained pressure for about a 90-second spurt there, and then, yeah, Dale Weiss squeaked one by. .840 save percentage, by the way, for Carey.
Not
25
cool.
shots, 4 goals allowed.
I mean, at
Lindback
least in the end.
39 of 44.
Jesus. Fuck. At least in the end, it was respectable. Because there was a point in the third period where the goals allowed on shots taken. I mean, what didn't they score on 2 of 3 shots in the third period?
Sure did.
Not great.
I think they had 5 shots by the end of the period, but yeah, there's a span where 2 of the first 3 went in.
And I mean, not completely Price's fault. The defensive lapses showed up as well. They were, you know, 2-on-1s, but not what you want to see.
Not what you want to see. Like I said, I think he'll shake it off. I mean, the guy has a gold medal around his neck. I think he can get it done when it, you know, high-pressure situation, so
doubting.
To speak.
But I'm not doubting.
Not a great start for, you know, there's still, I guess, in some people's minds, questions dating back from last spring against Ottawa. So it's not the start you wanted to see. I mean, if Ben Bishop was in that game, it could have been. We probably would have lost it. But although Lindback played well. But I assume Price will rebound.
So
such
is
a great game, though. I mean, back and forth.
Jesus.
Every goal seemed to be answered within a couple minutes of the previous goal, and a lot of really nice goals, too.
Yeah. Yeah, there weren't really any cheap goals in the game, considering how many came, and the playoffs is the place for cheap goals.
Yeah, and like I said, overtime was just chance after chance after chance, and there was, you know, Pacioretty hit a post, and there was one, I can't even remember which Tampa player had a wide-open net, and Josh George has made maybe the play of the game. He hustled back and kind of
I
got in front
Stamkos.
Of the puck and prevented a wide open goal. I think it was Stamkos too. I don't know. That whole thing's a blur right now, just because I feel like my heart rate's still highly elevated from that game. But
my heart rate's still highly elevated. I've still got a full Stein in front of me as we begin this podcast. We shouldn't try and do too many post games because I tend to drink in a game that's stressful.
They might end up being the more entertaining ones. You never know.
Could be the case. So who was the Habs' best player in that game? Because for me, a few players really stood out, and they weren't necessarily who we expected. There was the big question around Daniel Briere, because the whole reason he's on this team is for what he can do in the postseason. Game 1, I would say, big check mark to Daniel Briere. He was fantastic.
Yeah, stuck on the fourth line for some reason. He played amazing.
Another who stands out for me, and who often kind of, for as good as he is in the regular season, and he's always fantastic in the regular season, a lot of times it seems like maybe he doesn't have anything left in the playoffs. Not the case, at least in game 1. Plekanec was amazing. He was...
I think
he was the best player on the game.
I do too. Eller played very well as well.
That was the third mention I wanted to get. Lars Eller, for everything that we did. I mean, he looked like Lars Eller from 13 months ago.
Yeah, and again, we've talked all year about how he's slowly but surely emerged as a really good two-way player, and he was, you know, he had his chances offensively. He had some nice, generated some nice plays, but really the key for him was defensively. He was really, really solid on the defensive end tonight.
Montreal played a great game. There's not really, I mean, outside of a few defensive breakdowns and Carey not making a couple of nice saves, Montreal just dominated that game.
Yeah, I mean, if Carey's his usual self, that's probably a 4-1, 5-1 finish. Like you said, they weren't all his fault. Some of them were just nice goals. Some of them were weird goals. Some of them were defensive breakdowns, but he wasn't great. But yeah, the rest of the team, I don't really have any complaints. You know, Carey's probably the only one who gets a middling grade.
I don't see how we go into game 2 with any complaints to any of the, which is, like I say, mirror image of the season. Everyone else besides Carey Price pretty much gets a check mark to their performance in game 1.
Yeah, and you know, the most important thing, they still won on the road, which is
huge.
You know, especially if you can do that in the first game. A series doesn't really start until you steal that first road win. And for them, you know, the Habs kind of kind of coughed up a home ice advantage down the stretch there, but
8-2 and
regained it tonight.
8-2-1 in the final 11. I'm not going to be too upset about that. We've moved into the playoffs, so I'm not going to get into it, but coughed up, I feel, is a bit strong.
That's fair.
I'm here to be fair until this beer's done, and then we're going to get very unfair. So this will be this is an interesting podcast because it's going to be a little shorter. Why? Because the game went in overtime, and some of us have worked in the morning. Both of us. Not to brag. In the middle of hard times. So we'll get in the 12-pack. It's a bit of a look back at the season and a bit of a look ahead to the playoffs. Question one. Who's the Habs MVP this season?
We've said this a million times, but your goalie, if you're a decent team, your goalie almost by default is your MVP.
Yeah.
Maybe not Pittsburgh, maybe not Chicago, but 8 times out of 10, your goalie is going to be your most valuable player. And Price had maybe the best season of his career. So Price is the obvious answer. But Pacioretty is an extremely strong runner-up.
Much stronger than I expected.
I mean, had the best season by a Habs forward by anyone since at least Stefan Richer and maybe probably since Guy Lafleur.
Jesus, that's a big sentence, but I don't disagree with it.
I mean, finished third in the league in goals, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's done that since Lafleur.
Yeah. So I think it was Price because, again, this wasn't a great possession team. Price was fantastic. He gives you a chance every single night.
Yeah.
But Pacioretty, a pretty close number two in my books, and he deserves all the credit in the world.
No disagreement. It's definitely Carey Price and Pacioretty in second. And you know what? I think for the way the season finished out, I'm going to give Mark Bergevin a third chance at that because the addition of Vanek changed the chemistry of the team. Maybe not the chemistry, but the physics almost of the team more than anything. Suddenly they went from a team that was able to do one thing to a team that was able to do something else. And I think Vanek gets the goal tonight. I see it as it's an element of an attack the Canadians haven't had in the time that I've been watching the Montreal Canadiens. In my entire life, they've never had the element of attack of a legitimate top line in the NHL.
Yeah, it went from being a team that was maybe punching above its weight a little bit to a team, I mean, they had a legitimate top line with two 40-goal caliber wingers.
Exactly.
And like you said, everything changed. Everyone kind of got slotted into their right spot, which is a bit easier to do when you have an extra elite forward on the team. But it still blows my mind that Bergevin was able to get Vanek, especially for what he got him for.
Well, look.
But that, I mean, that is a textbook. You know, if you're going to make a move at the deadline, I mean, going in and getting a guy like Vanek for that price and, you know, completely rechanging what the possibilities of your season and taking your team from sort of just a middling team to at least an interesting team. That was a real coup by Bergevin. It's even more impressive a month and a half after the fact. And
yep.
It was pretty damn impressive at the time.
No, now that it's become obvious that they've gelled as a line, it's even more impressive. And I mean, just think, look at what's happened in Toronto. And I mean, I'm at the epicenter of it, and I think I live it every day, so I feel it a little bit more. But I think everybody outside of Toronto also understands the implosion that's happening in the center of the universe right now. Colberg, that's barely an offer. Anybody could have easily beat that offer. If Toronto makes that offer and adds Vanek to a Van Riemsdyk-Kessel team, I don't think they miss the playoffs. I really don't. I mean, it's a season changer to that degree. And for Bergevin to have somehow pulled that off for what he gave up is amazing to me, whether Vanek stays or not.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side of that is, you know, Montreal was never the never the smoke and mirrors team that Toronto was. But if they don't go out and get Vanek, you know, we forget how that team was playing for a stretch.
That's fair.
You know,
that's fair.
Before and after the Olympics, maybe Montreal's the team that falls out of the playoff picture. Nah. Vanek could have been that difference. I know some people would argue me on that.
I will.
I don't 100% believe that, but he made a big difference down the stretch.
But they're the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
They're very good at this. It doesn't help. It doesn't help at all. All right, move us into the second spot.
Second spot is the reverse. Who was the Habs LVP this season, their least valuable player?
He played a lot better game one against Tampa Bay, but when all said and done on the 82-game stretch, for me, Rene Bourque's the least valuable player. And this comes from me who has completely taken a crap on Douglas Murray several times, as well as Francis Bouillon on occasion. But those guys are trying. Rene Bourque, I think, is just playing so below his potential. Like, Bouillon, I think Bouillon's playing to the max of what he can do. Douglas Murray, I think he's playing to the max of what he can do.
I do, too.
Unfortunately, for everybody involved. But Rene Bourque, I mean, this guy was at least Andre Kostitsyn at a point. When we acquired him for Camilleri, at least he was that. He'd show up some days, he wouldn't other days. He was soft from here and there. But when all was said and done, he'd be 25 in that range on a season. He's not that anymore. He's a shell of that. And for that, I say I think Rene Bourque was the least valuable player on the team.
Yeah, we have the same answer. Murray might have been the worst player in the NHL this year.
Yeah. So Rene Bourque steals it from him.
But for every complaint we've had about Douglas Murray this season, those were, in a sense, those were really complaints about Michel Therrien.
Yep, very true.
I mean, Murray's a really bad player, but if he's your number seven defenseman and you plug him in when you absolutely have to, like, he's still going to be horrible, but we're not really going to be talking about him any more than we do about Davis Juriski or Chris Campoli or anyone
very
like that.
True.
So for all the complaints I had about the way Murray played this season, those were more directed at the head coach who treated him like a top four D-man. Whereas Bourque, like you said, this is a guy who's making whatever it is, $3.5-4 million a season. He's ostensibly a top six, top nine forward. You brought him in to be that, and he was just a non-entity.
Completely.
And like you said, I mean, I think sometimes we overdo the, you know, if a guy's not performing, we just assume that he's not trying. But when Bourque's not trying, it's really obvious.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, I believe it was Brian Wilde brought it up, and I agree with him. Bourque's playing for preservation at this point. He is. He knows he's one concussion away from it being over for him.
Yeah.
So he's playing, and so as a human, I understand that. I get why he's playing the way he plays. And there's a good chance, I'm talking out of my ass, there's a reason to expect maybe in the playoffs he ups that a little bit. But when he's playing for his livelihood, his life, he's going to be soft the rest of the way, no matter what. I completely believe that. And I understand it as a sympathetic person, but when you're watching a team and you're watching that kind of cap space be wasted, it's very frustrating. It's hard to know that somebody out there is not giving their everything and just looking after themselves. I mean, it's a team sport. We cheer for it as fans from that element. I understand what Bourque's doing, but that doesn't mean it's not very frustrating as a fan, and I'm sure very frustrating as a teammate.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a shame we didn't get three amnesty buyouts coming out of the lockout instead of two, because he would be a stone cold lock to get waived this offseason.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's not like, you know, Rene Bourque, you said those 25 goal seasons, and this one was an offseason. I expect him to return to that. We're looking at what Rene Bourque is from here on out. I'm convinced of that at this point. And that may not be the case for the playoffs.
Because Leo has been trending downward for a couple seasons.
Yeah.
Like, he was, you know, he was borderline serviceable last season, but he wasn't great.
And he may put in a better effort in the playoffs. I mean, who knows what, you know, the playoffs is a different thing, and maybe he ups it. But as soon as you get back into another 82-game stretch, this is Rene Bourque.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think I'm maybe being generous to what we'll expect to see in the playoffs. But he played, you
know, so
what?
Too. I mean, you never know. It's, you know, a couple good shifts, a couple weird bounces. He could have a decent stat line, and we'll look back at him as a performer, you know, in the playoffs. But, you know, this was not a guy you trade. I mean, this is a stupid statement, but this is not a guy you traded for to be a healthy scratch more often than not. He was at one point in time the top six forward in the NHL. One point in time, not too long ago.
Well, let's just put it this way. The player that Camilleri was traded for, as much as that's probably an indefensible trade, certainly an indefensible trade in how it went down, but in the logistics of it, certainly a win for Calgary. And I mean, you should never lose a trade to the Calgary Flames. When that trade happened, at least...
You don't want to get fleeced by Jay Feaster.
Yeah, exactly. When that trade happened, at least, I did on this podcast. I came up with a mild defense of it. That was with the Bourque they traded for. The Bourque that you have now, that's an indefensible trade. It's not even close. I mean, the player you thought you were getting versus what showed up, they're not the same guy, and the concussions are a big part of that. But I don't know how defensible that is. I mean, you know, we still got to as fans, I don't think we completely put the human element in there all the time. I understand why he's doing it, but that's frustrating still.
Yeah, and I don't think he's tradable is the other thing. Luckily, there's only a year left on his hit, but yeah. He'll be back next year. I expect him, frankly, I expect him to be a healthy scratch more often than not next season. Unless there's injuries, he'll be a guy who steps in. But
well, and as you say,
his days as a full-time starter in this league might be done.
Yeah,
exactly. At least on a relatively deep team like Montreal. Maybe, I'm sure someone will sign him once he becomes a UFA, but I don't think he's tradable with this cap hit at all.
If you ever scored 25 goals in this league, you've got about a 10-year window after that where someone will give you a shot, I think.
Tell Jonathan Petrie that.
That's fair. What the heck? I don't understand that. Steroids?
Maybe the oddest statistical season in NHL history.
It might be. Moving us ahead, which Canadiens player surprised/impressed you the most? So another way to word that, who's your under-the-radar MVP?
Gianta got the – I always forget what that award is called, but Gianta got the yearly award that we give out for sort of the unsung hero.
I only know the week after.
A little bizarre to give to your captain.
Yeah.
But Gianta, for a guy who got some heat at some point in the season, he still finished near the 20 goal mark and was pretty decent offensively. And this is a different team if Brian Gianta is not on the ice.
Definitely.
I still think he generates more chances than he is as a minus on the team. I think he's a net generator of possession and offensive chances. And he wasn't great this year. I think he's definitely on the decline. But I think, reports of his demise were greatly exaggerated. I think he's still sort of a relatively integral part of the team. So I was pretty happy to see Gianta get that award. And he's probably my pick.
Completely agree. And the thing, I had some people over watching game one tonight. And talking about Gianta a little bit, and the thing is, he's obviously a smart player. When he scored the goal against the New York Rangers in the penalty shot to win it in the final game of the season, Terrier's comments after the game, the team's comments after the game, were obvious. Gianta has a leadership role that we didn't see on Vate Katsayash. We didn't see in a lot of ways. And so there was a lot of question marks about why Gianta's the captain. But I think, if nothing else, what we understood from Gianta this season is that he's an intelligent player. And he's an intelligent player in the way Scott Gomez was not an intelligent player. I mean, this is a guy who had major, major scoring seasons. I mean, much like Gomez, exactly like Gomez. They were on the same team. They were teammates. They essentially did it in unison. Things changed for them, and they were no longer the player they once were. Gianta has adapted to that over time, and this season we really saw it. He saw his role, especially once Vanek came into the fold. His role made sense on third line, a great third line player. He was no longer the goal scorer, but he had the smarts for the game. He's the wisdom of the game at this point to be a great defensive forward. He can still contribute, as we saw, I think in the past 10 games he's turned it on. And I even kind of thought about this, and I would have a little bit of talk about Gianta might be at the point of his career where he knows, especially based on what happened against Ottawa last year, where nobody seemed to have anything for those playoffs, he may have reached what I call, to cross sports again, like a Tim Duncan thing, where you know how to put it on the right amount of cruise control through the season to get there. The last 10 games of the year, suddenly Brian Gianta was a main topic of conversation amongst people watching Montreal Canadiens. And in the game one, he seemed to be there again. I think he's smart enough and he's a leader enough to know what he can do at various parts of the season. Now he's upped his game a little bit as we go in the stretch, but he also understood throughout the rest of the season, there's no insult to being a third line guy at his age. There's no insult to doing what he needs to do. He's had his glamour days. He's been a top scorer. Now he's filling the role right. And I think that's what Scott Gomez never seemed to realize, was you need to evolve your game as you age. He continued to try and be whatever he was when he was a 40 goal scorer. And that just wasn't there for him. Whereas Gianta's proven he knows how to evolve with his age and the game.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And just to circle back briefly, I have two pieces of bad news for you.
Jesus, I don't want two pieces.
I know, one of which we know. One is that I'm an idiot.
Okay, I always knew that.
The second is we got 2 years of work left, not one.
Oh, Jesus.
Doesn't expire until 15-16. For some reason, I thought it was coming off the books.
I did, too. But, I didn't correct you because I'm
wrong about that. So
that's weird, because we've never been wrong on this podcast. It's very
that's tough because one, you know, almost no matter how bad a contract is, if there's 1 year left, you can kind of brace yourself for it. But 2 years is a you know, a significant chunk of time for a team that kind of has a window open here. So interesting to see if Bergevin could do anything with that. Like I said, I don't know if he's tradable at this point, but
if he has, you know, a good playoff, he's tradable. Bit,
maybe you can convince one of those bottom feeder teams that they need a 15 to 20 goal guy.
If he shows up in whatever stretch of games the Habs have ahead of them, that he's very tradable. I mean, look at Dave Bolin. I mean, they're convinced this is the ultimate leader in Toronto because he had a good playoffs. He's a third line guy. Don't tell them that, but you know, that's what they're convinced of. All it takes is a good playoffs, and then anybody's movable. And if Bork has a good playoffs, I think then pull the trigger on that, because you're going to get value back that he's not going to give you, at least in the regular season. And he's, as you say, he's trending down.
There's two ways they trade him. Either you sort of sweeten the pot, you package him with a first or second round pick, or you take some other kind of struggling, crappy player in return and hope that it changes. You know, it's one of those risky change of scenery type trades.
Can we not trade him to the KHL?
Rene Bork for David Clarkson.
Oof, no, thank you. I will keep Rene Bork, Holmes. Jesus. I was talking to you earlier this week, and I've had a bit of around the town business, so I've been driving around in the car a lot this week, and since Toronto got eliminated. And there's nothing more delightful for me these days than listening to Toronto sports radio. I mean, just fantastic stuff. Just, I'm drinking in the depression, and it's been great. As awful as that sounds.
Yeah, that is going to go down as a Scott Gomez level albatross. Maybe even worse, because it was signed, you know, post lockout too.
Well, I mean, you can listen to the tapes, but we'll admit it right now. We both said, look, that's a horrible contract, but they'll probably get a couple years where there's some value to it. Like, I really thought he was going to contribute to the Maple Leafs in a positive fashion this season or next. And that didn't even happen. I mean, I guess he could rebound, but holy crap, that's by far the worst contract in the NHL right now, right? That's the opposite of the Max Pacioretty contract. I'm glad to be on the good end of that one, because Scott Gomez for a long time made us the worst contract in the league team. Clarkson makes Toronto that. And that hangs by you. I mean, that hangs around a team. I think everyone feels that albatross, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think the Gomez stink was something that really hung on the Canadians in that disastrous season.
I don't know if the stink hangs over you, but I mean, just in a salary cap league, if you have player X taking up, you know, 10, 15, 20% of your cap and being like a sub replacement level player, that's not a recipe for success.
Do you not think
you can? You know, you
that breeds
the
problems.
The contract sucks, but you can kind of get away with it, I guess.
But Scott Gomez Clarkson, making $7 million,
that hampers you for years.
Scott Gomez making $7 million, that's not going to cause problems in the locker room.
I don't know.
There's egos at stake here, and look, we all know how paychecks work. The useless fuck in your office gets three times as much as you, and contributes nothing. That's going to upset things. I'm convinced of that. There's too much human nature in a locker room for people to shrug that off. Especially if useless dude in office means you can't bring on two useful guys in your office. I'm sorry. I realize you're the useless fuck in your office and this upset you.
Hence the silence.
I know.
I'm fine with it. It's a pretty sweet gig.
It was a good job. Where are we at here?
We are at number four, the 2013-2014 season. So obviously it's an incomplete. But what letter grade would you give the Canadiens regular season?
At this point, I got to give them a B+.
Yeah.
And this is this point being before game one, win one of the playoffs. I think the regular season, 82 games, that's a B+. A would have been above expectation. I think B is expectation. I think they sailed a little bit above expectation. I think they're a good team. I think Therrien was a bit of a problem, as I've said all season. That doesn't come to surprise anyone listening. So I think they could be better, so I can't give them an A. But I think the main problem is the coach, but he's part of the whole thing. So B+, I think. They were a little bit of above expectation, but they didn't hit their ceiling.
Yeah, that's fair. Somewhere in the B range. I mean, if you told me before the season the team's going to, you know, clinch a playoff spot with about 10 games to go, finish 8-2-1 down the stretch, finish with over 100 points, that Carey Price is going to win a gold medal and be a borderline Vezina candidate, that Max Pacioretty is going to be top five in the league in goals, that we're going to acquire Thomas Vanek for nothing. Would have been pretty happy with all those things.
So now it's an A+ based on the description you just gave.
It's been a pretty good season. And like you, I have problems with the coaching. I think the team, you know, in some ways the team has underachieved. In other ways, they've sort of statistically played above their heads a little bit. But, I have a lot of problems with the way this team is coached. But that being said, Therrien has led this team to second in the conference and fourth in the conference in back-to-back seasons. So
after last place.
What's that?
I say after a last place season.
Yeah.
Hard to argue as much as we bitch about the coach. I'm not going to change that. But it is hard to argue with the results.
Yep, it is.
Wish I could find a way to do it. Because I try anyways. Number five. How much does the Galchenyuk injury hurt the Habs? I mean, this comes, we probably have a little more post-game win on us after game one of the series against Tampa Bay. Yeah. But it's a hard one still, right?
It is, although I don't know how much of a difference maker Galchenyuk was going to be in the first round. Mm-hmm. He's great. We've all seen the flashes, but, you know, I don't think Galchenyuk was going to go on a tear against Tampa or in the playoffs in general. That being said, you know, maybe he has one of those games where he scores a goal at an opportune time or he has a 2-assist game or something. I mean, it obviously hurts. You're losing one of your top 9 forwards, but thankfully the team has a little bit of depth now. And, I don't think it's certainly not the crushing blow it would have been in seasons past. And for a team that's had pretty good injury luck all season long, I can't get too bent out of shape about it.
I see what you mean, and I agree with it. I don't think Alex Galchenyuk was going to be the difference maker in this series. I really don't. But the Canadiens, for the first time in, what, a decade? Had, for a little bit of time there, some cemented lines where people could get some chemistry. And so I think the Galchenyuk injury is going to hurt the Habs the most. And they can still get by Tampa Bay without him. We'll see what happens, but I think it's within the realm of their skills to get past Tampa Bay without him. But everyone was just slotting in so nicely when he was in that lineup. And so, I mean, to that I equal it to anybody in the top six falling out, hurting the team. Because the chemistry was so nice, and at least the first line gets to stay that way, but it did. It fucked up 2, 3, and 4 a little bit. And I would just, in that sense, I think it hurts a really good chemistry they had in the final 13 games of the season where everybody really was playing at the right line they were meant to. Gianta on the third, Lars on the third. At least for this season, everyone was playing exactly where they should be. And so that's what the Galchenyuk injury does. It forces at least one player on the team to probably need to play above where he'd been comfortable playing all season long.
Yeah, I mean, the longer, the deeper the Habs go, the more problematic it becomes if he's not coming back. We get the impression, that he'll probably be ready come round two if it comes to that, but we don't know that. And, obvious statement, but let's say this team makes it to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, the team we have now isn't going to be all the guys that are still standing in a month from now.
Definitely not.
So, you can afford to lose Galchenyuk, especially now that Prest is back, that type of thing, but if Galchenyuk's out and then, Darnay takes a puck to the ankle in Game 7 against Tampa or something, then it becomes very problematic. I think you can withstand the loss of Galchenyuk for now, but I also say that with the caveat that I kind of think he'll be back for round two.
Speaking of injuries, what's your theory on Bishop? When do we expect him back? Because I don't think he's coming back in round one. I think that's the whole playoffs bullshit game.
Yeah, from everything you read, it almost seemed even 48 hours ago that there was no chance that he'd be back.
Exactly.
For round one. I would be shocked if he came back.
Well, we're told he skated and didn't take a shot. I mean, we know it's an arm injury. Anybody can skate with a hurt arm. It could be smashed in 8 places. The guy can go out and skate. We'll see what we, and the Habs will have to adjust as they go, whether or not Bishop returns, but For me, it seems like it'd be a big stretch for him, for us to see him at any point in round one. And I think it's one of those things that it's just one of those playoff mind games that you have to play. You can't say he's gone because that they're probably lying to their own team on that account. You got to keep at least you can't let that little bit of doubt get in for your own team or that opportunity for the other team. I don't think we're going to see Bishop in round one if should Tampa Bay manage to go beyond that, maybe. But I don't think
that
was a bad injury.
In the first two rounds, even.
And I like what Tampa Bay. I understand why Tampa Bay is lying about it. I would too. I mean, you got to keep the other team guessing, because otherwise, you just prepare for Lynn back, and you don't waste any time preparing for Bishop, who it would have been a big difference in this series. And we'll see what happens. I mean, there's a lot of games to be played. Obviously, Montreal's only up 1-0 in this thing. But as you said off the top, I think Bishop might have made the difference tonight.
Yeah, I think so. And Lingback wasn't horrible, but, you know.
He wasn't horrible.
Bishop's going to be a Vezina finalist.
That must be a question on here. It is not.
It is not, but
so
the
who do you
next
like?
Question, who will be the key players for both Montreal and Tampa?
This is interesting because I answered this before game one, and I'm going to stand by it. But in the obvious category, I've got Carey Price and Steve Stamkos. Stamkos proved it in game one. I mean, not a difference maker in that Tampa Bay didn't win that game, but, you know, he's the team, it seems, at this point. Carey Price, that wasn't the case in game one, but if Montreal wants to win this thing, I think he needs to be one of their best players.
Yeah, a couple other names I'd throw in there. Vanek and or Pacioretty, I just have a feeling that one of them's going to... I mean, they're both elite-level goal scorers who are super streaky. And I have a feeling one of them's gonna pull a Camilleri.
There was a stretch in that game where I believe the De Panic line, as we call it on the Montreal Bias, had 17 shots on net to Tampa Bay's 22.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous. I also in the less obvious category, I'd say keep an eye on Hedman and Gallagher.
Yeah, Hedman was fantastic.
Hedman didn't play. I mean, he's been so good this whole season. How did Sweden not take him?
It's really unbelievable.
I mean, he deserves a Norris nomination.
Really, really good. Yeah, he's going to be a key. The other one, you know, I put Callahan on the list as well. And just Callahan or someone else, because as great as Stamkos is, you know, whether it's Filippula, whether it's Callahan, like, they're going to need some secondary scoring. And they've gotten it all season long. There's no reason to suspect that they won't. But, you know, just, you know, Stamkos was a beast tonight. But it can't be Stamkos scoring two goals every night, I don't think.
Tell you what, I do thank the hockey gods that there's zero Quebecois stars on this team. I do not miss Le Cavalier not being there, and I do not miss St. Louis not being there.
I think Cedric Paquette thinks he's a star.
Oh, he certainly thinks so. That didn't take long to hate that little shit. I don't even think he's little, but he's still a shit. It's like Pajot from last year's playoffs. Immediate despisal.
I know.
Question number, where are we at? Like I
we
said,
are
I've been drinking.
At,
seven?
The Mick, yeah.
Who wins the Eastern Conference matchups here?
So I got Montreal winning in six.
All right.
And for the other three, Boston-Detroit is going to be a great series. And
I'm excited
so
for that one.
Friggin'
That's
tempted to
awesome.
Pick Detroit, but...
Boston
has been the best team in the NHL.
I got
year,
them
so
circled.
I think they pull it off in seven.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pittsburgh sweeps Columbus, and I think the Rangers beat Philly in seven.
Rangers over Philly.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a coin flip, but I like the way the Rangers have been playing lately.
It's definitely a coin flip, but you've been trying to talk me into Philly all year.
I've been trying to talk you into the Rangers all year too.
Yeah, usually I agree with you on the Rangers though. The Philly thing I haven't bought into Mason at all.
Yeah.
And yet, here I am picking Philly, and you're picking the Rangers. Who knows why we do as we do? I got Boston, I got Pitt, I got Philly, and I got Montreal. And I'm Philly, New York, I feel that one's going seven. Pitt, Columbus had its chance tonight, and I really think they that was it. They had to win tonight to put that bit of doubt in there. Fleury may solidify from here going forward. We'll see. Fleury's always a giant question mark. And Detroit-Boston, I'm excited. Like you, though, I have Boston getting out of that one as well.
I know some people think that Columbus is going to give Pittsburgh trouble, but I
read that
really
a lot.
See it. I think that Columbus team is, you know, pretty mediocre.
I would say that's exactly what they are. They're very mediocre. They remind me of the Montreal Canadiens most season.
Yeah.
They get in the playoffs based on decent to strong goaltending, a couple guys stepping up, but really when all's said and done, they're kind of thin.
Yeah.
They found a way in, but there's not a lot to them. As long as Fleury's all right, Pittsburgh's a great, great team.
Yeah, and they're finally resembling a healthy team as well.
Yeah, which is huge for them. Yeah. I mean, nobody's between Detroit and Pittsburgh, I mean, you lost essentially four seasons of hockey somehow.
But they're both getting healthy at the right time.
They are. God, I would love Detroit to take down Boston.
I mean, I was so close to picking them, but that Boston team's pretty damn good.
Let's just look too far ahead. Boston-Montreal round two. Do the Habs have a chance?
The Habs match up really, really well against Boston.
Rask does not play them well.
I know it's a small sample size, and I know part of me is picking with my heart rather than my head, but, I mean, we've won 6 out of 7 against these guys. And Rask's stats and numbers and record and just play against Montreal has been weak.
I mean, if there's one team, you know, we talk about being in the other team's head a lot. If there's one team in the other's head, Montreal's in Boston's head. They've got that much.
It seems like they are, yeah.
You don't win that. Boston's clearly the better team. You don't win 6 of 7 from the obvious better team if you don't have some mental advantage over them.
I mean, needless to say, Boston will be, you know, hyper-motivated come playoff time. But, you know, I don't think it's like they have a problem getting up for regular season games against the Habs either. And the other thing with Boston is, like, they're going to be pretty damn tired.
Yep. They've gone on.
We always forget how there's, you know, it takes a really lucky, healthy, physically strong, mentally strong team to make, you know, consecutive deep playoff runs, to say nothing of like 3 in a row or 4 in a row.
I'm very interested to see what Chara has for Detroit in the round one. That'll tell us
Chara
a lot.
Fell off a cliff in the finals last year.
It completely disappeared, which, I mean, you know, 3 rounds he survived and then the fourth he wasn't there for. But, you know, add that to a full season this year. I will be very interested to see what Chara has. Because if Chara can be Chara at his best, he's the best defenseman in the NHL. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. And then Boston becomes a real cup contender. But if Chara starts to show some signs of age, then you can maybe beat the Bruins. Who wins the Western Conference, sir? Well, the matchups. Skipping ahead. No, I'm just going straight to the matchups. Sorry.
Western Conference. I have Colorado over Minnesota in 6.
Yep.
Chicago over St. Louis in 5. I don't think that series is going to be as close as most people do. I've got Dallas pulling off the upset over Anaheim in 7. And the Kings, San Jose, I have absolutely no idea. I said the Kings in 7, but who knows?
Colorado's going to be mini. Patrick Kane is not losing his first ever playoff round. And the Avs, I mean, as much as we've doubted them, they're better than Minnesota. I'm fairly confident about that. The St. Louis-Chicago thing, I mean, what? 3 weeks ago would have been tough to pick. Now it's hands down Chicago. St. Louis is and injuries are obviously huge. I mean, you look at who's out for that team. It's a shorter list than who's in. But I got Chicago in that one. I got Anaheim beating Dallas. And I've got, this is the first year, and I'll say this right now so it'll lead to all the rest of my picks. This is the first year ever in my hockey fandom that I have confidence in the San Jose Sharks. I think they're the real thing this year, so I got San Jose beating the Kings in a great series.
I think they're for real, too, and I've been picking them all season. I just think, you know, the way the new playoff format works, just for them to draw the Kings is so rough.
Well, I mean, look at the Kings and Sharks, and we got Chicago and St. Louis. As much as St. Louis has fallen off, I mean, those might be the 4 best teams in the NHL this season.
The Bruins are in the mix, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I would give
the top 5, I would say.
I would give the Bruins a shot in there, but Jesus, that's a hell of a first round for those teams to be facing off.
Yeah, I mean, 2 very legitimate Stanley Cup contenders are going to be gone after the first round.
Yep, for sure. 2 teams that You know, at the three-quarter mark of the season, all you would have been convinced all had a chance at a Stanley Cup. What could be interesting, just to fall back to the Eastern, and this is getting ahead of ourselves, but how great is the prospect of Boston, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia in round two of these playoffs?
I know.
I mean, that, like, for all the shit that we've thrown on the East all season, rightfully so. I mean, the East has not been the West. But suddenly the East erases all the, you know, the East is weak rhetoric at this point, because those are the two best rivalries in the NHL, and there's a good chance they meet in the second round.
Yeah, and the other thing I will say, I'm not 100%, I haven't done a complete 180 on the new playoff format, but I'm warming up to it a little bit now that it's started.
Well, now that I understand it, I'm kind of on board. It took a full season for me to see where it was going.
I wish that the conferences weren't in balance, because that's just asinine.
Yeah.
B, I still don't like the crossover. But the sort of bracket aspect of it, I kind of enjoy.
Yep.
And I do like the sort of fighting your way out of the division thing, because it sets up these glamour matchups that we just talked
about. Well, it does. I mean, in a weird way, it harkens back to the old days.
Yeah, it does.
Something about it feels like, you got to beat the guys. And I like that in sports. I mean, that's just you can disagree, and that's just about how you feel about your fandom and whatever. But I like the whole idea that you have to climb out of whatever nick of the woods that it is you're in. And, you know, it'd be a baseball, basketball, hockey. I like the idea that, you know, you get your guys and you wrestle with them, and it creates great rivalries, and you've got to emerge from that before you take on whoever comes out of the, you know, the other King of the Mountain battles, and then you play it off for the top. But it is going to create some rivalries.
Yeah, I mean, the scenario you described is, you know, exactly what Bettman and the Governors had in mind when they drew this up.
It's brilliant.
If you have a second round of, like you said, Montreal, Boston, Philly, Pittsburgh, obviously, arguably the two best rivalries in the NHL. And then, you know, out west, let's say you go Colorado, Chicago, that's relatively enticing. And then
it becomes interesting the moment Patrick Waugh's in there.
A Subway Series or something. Like, those are four pretty marketable second round matchups.
I believe all those could happen, too.
Yeah.
That's it. For year one, it's interesting. I'll give it that much. We'll see how it shakes down. I mean, you know, there's a lot more to go here, but could be fantastic. And the thing is, the second round often feels like the mismatched round, where you just kind of get a random competitor. Whereas this year, the second round gets a lot more weight, because you're definitely going to be playing one of your so-called rivals. And then once you get to the heavyweight of your conference, then who cares who you're playing? You know, it's not about rivalries. The Stanley Cup is the prize. Rivalries can be born very quickly. When there's four teams left going for it, you don't need to write the stories, you know, from history. It's just the immediacy of the situation. So through one season, and we only played one game, but just looking at all the possible matchups, I'm very much on board with the new lineup right now. Post-game beer. Question 9, we probably sort of answered this, outside of Tampa Bay Habs, which are you most looking forward to? It's Chicago-St. Louis, right?
No, it's Kings-Sharks for me.
Oh, see, we didn't answer it. Well, I guess we did, but we disagree on it.
Yeah, no, for me it's Kings-Sharks. I mean, that could be the Cup Finals, and I would be extremely happy.
I agree that's the best, but Chicago-St. Louis is still the most intriguing to me, because I haven't completely written the Blues off yet. And they pushed all their chips in the middle, and now they get Chicago in the first, and they're struggling. I mean, I want to watch that, even if they got a weak hand to play. St. Louis went for it this year.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, that's always been a bit of a sleeping giant franchise, you know, for the past couple of years at least. I mean, that's in the past, that's been a pretty good hockey city.
And Ryan Miller could show up suddenly.
Yeah, he could. If that, you know, it's good for the NHL if the Blues, I mean, it's better if Chicago goes deep, but
yeah.
If the Blues make a deep run, I think you could reignite a passion for hockey in that market.
I would agree with that. That's a good market.
I think so too. I think it's
St. Louis just likes a winner. Go ahead.
It's a bit of a sleeping giant. It's one of those, you know, maybe they're not going to support you through thick and thin, but I think if they get to the second, third round, I think you're going to see some interest being generated.
You're just trying to bring up a reference to your favorite band. They might be Giants.
That's very true.
You've always loved them.
I'm hoping their hockey fans are a little less sanctimonious than their baseball fans are. But
Jesus, no kidding. We promised for an hour for this thing, so we should get it rolling here. Who wins the East?
The New York Rangers.
The Rangers. God, you buy high on them.
I've got the Rangers over the Habs in seven games in the Eastern Conference.
Holy shit, Holmes. That's interesting.
Marking the eighth year in a row I've gone with the Rangers, I think.
Yeah, you always support the Rangers.
I really do.
Over the Habs. So you got Montreal riding past Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Riding past the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
And you got New York riding outside of Philly, going into, staying in Pennsylvania, moving past the Penguins, Montreal, Lundqvist, Sweden, Carey Price, I reversed that obviously, Carey Price, Canada, and the gold medal, and you got to, you somehow have Sweden winning that one.
I guess so, yeah.
You stupid bastard.
I had a really, I mean, I'm never right on my predictions anyway, so it's meaningless that I had difficulty with
this year. I don't
know
why anyone's listening to this podcast.
I have no idea what I'm talking, like, I had a really hard time picking who was going to win it this year.
It is a tough year, right? I mean, as much
it's
as
a
we
tough
were
year,
wrong,
I think we're all getting used to the new format.
That could be part of it. But I feel, I don't know, I feel like the NHL's better almost this season. I think there's more teams that have a shot at it. The East, because anyone can climb out of it. And the West, because holy shit, that's a lot of good teams.
Yeah, the West is just wide open. Like you said, the West is wide open because it's strong. The East, like there's two teams that are clearly a step above everyone else. Yeah. But they have flaws, and maybe we're all just kind of looking for reasons not to pick Boston or not to pick Pittsburgh.
That's true. We are.
For some reason, I don't think it's going to be one of those two teams. Pittsburgh, we've seen flame out plenty of times. In Boston, I just think it's really friggin' hard to get to back-to-back finals.
I have
Boston
getting
there. So for some reason,
there.
I think it's going to be either New York, Philly, or Montreal that somehow makes a weird run to the final.
I got Boston.
That's a much smarter choice.
I just couldn't pick against them. As much as I think Montreal has a chance of beating them, even Detroit has maybe a shot of beating them. But if I'm really, you know, at the end of the day, if I got to choose if my life's on the line, I got to suspect the Bruins get out of the East. And coming out of the West, this is a complete reversal. If you've listened to this podcast for three seasons that we've been doing this or anything else we've ever done, I've always, always chastised Sean for picking the Sharks year in, year out. This is the year I believe in the San Jose Sharks. I have them winning the West and meeting the Bruins in the Stanley Cup final.
I came so close to picking them to win the West, and I saw them going out in the first round. I just spent 5 minutes talking about how it's almost impossible to go back finals, and to prove that point, I took the Chicago Blackhawks to come out of the West.
Really stand by what you said 2 seconds ago. Real Damian Cox over here.
So you've got the Joe Thornton Cup. You've got San Jose,
I've got the
Boston.
Joe Thornton Cup, which they should rename it, really. Give a whole new cup. And he's going to score 4 goals in Game 7, the fourth coming in overtime, and he's going to whip it out and stroke it.
And I've got the Gary Bettman wet dream of Chicago, New York.
Well, that is the Gary Bettman wet dream, which is also the name of this podcast. Fantastic. Fantastic. Better than the Joe Thornton Cup. And who wins it?
The Chicago Blackhawks will be the first back-to-back champs since the Red Wings, right?
Yep. We're due for a back-to-back. I don't disagree with that. I think it's harder to win
it's
a back-to-back.
It's damn hard
though.
To do nowadays, but yep. I think they've got the horses to do it. And they're getting healthy at the right time.
I got Thomas Hertl lifting the Stanley Cup.
I love it. I would love to see that happen.
San Jose almost deserves a cup at this point. That's like a market that doesn't get the respect it deserves because of the teal. I think it's the teal in their uniforms and everything else.
They're a Batman expansion franchise, and we all do the thing. Like,
no, it's the teal.
Where we just dismissively shrug them off, and then, oh, yeah, San Jose's actually a really good hockey market.
Yeah, they get great support. They've been a really good team. I mean, imagine, okay, put San Jose in St. Louis. Well, that's another good team, so let's forget about that. Put them in Columbus or some shit, even though that's an expansion. It's not in California. It's in a coldish climate.
Yeah.
We'd all be like, oh, there's something to Columbus. We even gave Nashville some respect. But San Jose, they do it year in, year out. It doesn't help that they blew it. I'm sure they won, you know, had they managed to come through on their potential a few times, it may have changed our tune. But at the same time, part of it is the mid-90s expansion, and it belonged to Batman. There's not a lot of faith, but that's a great franchise at this point.
Yeah, and completely one of the... I would love to see that happen. I think, you know, they're kind of my... You know, if Montreal ain't going to win it, San Jose is probably my second choice.
That's an interesting question. I don't really... For everything I just said, that is the reason I don't care. I definitely don't want Colorado to win it. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, neither do
I. Detroit... Here's the thing about Detroit for me. I would like to see them win it because, firstly, defied all odds. Secondly, because any happiness that can be bestowed upon Detroit is give it to them because they have nothing else. But they're also, in the hockey sense of things, the most fortunate franchise that's existed in the past 25 years. Pittsburgh, I would like to see Crosby add another one because it's time. I got nothing against the New York Rangers ever winning. But really, part of me really wants to see Chicago win it again for some reason. And I think that's just because I have some weird fandom for Chicago.
They're a fun team to cheer for. Like, most hockey fans that I know, if you take partisanship out of it, like the Blackhawks a lot.
But, you know, I mean, we always like them. I mean, this is the team that's won two of the last four Stanley Cups or whatever. It's easy to like them.
And it's everything. They've got, you know, they got great fans. They got the great arena. They got the great sweater. They've got two once in a lifetime forwards.
They used to have Dustin Byfuglien until they blew it.
What's that?
I said they used to have Dustin Byfuglien until they blew it.
Yeah, that's true. They survived though. I think somehow. I got Chicago winning it. I think Taves just adds to his friggin' war chest of accolades.
War chest. Is that what he refers to his literal chest as?
They might be.
So there you go. That's a 12-pack. We flew through it.
In record time.
Well, we had to.
We did. Sorry we flew through it a little bit, but...
Well, the questions weren't that diverse. I mean, it was just who we thought were going to win.
There's that, but, I mean, yeah.
Still good.
There were points at every question where we both had to... It's so easy to go off on tangents.
I still got 25% of a beer left, so we will take a look a little bit at what's coming ahead and see if there's any prognostications. Obviously, game one, in the books, Montreal up 1-0 in this series. I survived barely. I'm beaten on the door of 30 at this point, and may have been the closest I've ever come to a full-on heart attack on a couple of those breaks. Friday, game two, Tampa Bay, once again. They're all at 7 o'clock. Don't ask what time they are at. 7 o'clock's the answer. Sunday into the Easter weekend. Game 3's in Montreal. Tuesday will be game 4 in Montreal. And then it's Tampa Bay, Montreal, Tampa Bay, if necessary, games 5, 6, and 7. I like this schedule a lot better than a lot of sports do it, where they give you 1-2, 1-2, and then switch it back and forth. Why not? We can all afford planes. It's a billion-dollar industry. How many games have you got? You got 6, you think?
Yeah, I think it goes 6.
6 for Montreal. Man, if the Habs got the Lightning on the ropes now, though.
A little bit. I mean, they've, like we said, they stole one on the road, which is the first step. And if they can hold serve at home, they're going to win the series. So
my prognostication written on the paper for last night's podcast was Habs take game 1. So I'm a fucking genius. Nailed that one. Do you have anything?
Prognostication?
Yeah.
I think the Thomas Vanek experience will include a hat trick in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, Jesus. Look at us reversing roles. We're like Tampa Bay and Montreal here. They the opposite of expectation. I went very moderate on mine, and you went bold. Hat trick for Vanek at some point.
I just think he's a big game player.
I hope you're right.
I hope I am too.
I have no disagreement with that. How concerned are we about Price? You know, we're a couple hours removed.
I'm not going to lie. I know, I mean, rationally I'm not, because it's one game, whatever, against a pretty good team. They got some biome. Like, yeah, the Stamkos goal was kind of weak, but he's also the second best goal scorer on the planet. Like, I'm not going to crucify him for it. I'm a little worried, though.
The Stamkos thing, here's what I'll say on the Stamkos thing. Yeah. You can make the excuse of Stamkos is the best goal scorer in the world, I think. Maybe the second best player in the world. So he's going to beat you. But Carey Price at this point is looking to punch at the weight of best goalie in the world. And you got to make those saves. And, which is shit. I mean, we won the game. I don't want to... And obviously, you and I are very much at Carey Price's corner. But you got to... I would have liked to have seen more from Price tonight. I'll say that much. I'm not in panic mode about him,
but we're all still waiting for that.
Exactly.
Carey Price time capsule.
I just want to see it. I want to see what I saw against the New York Rangers in game 82, a 41 save performance, something like that. You can do it. It's there. Tonight wasn't close to, I mean, tonight you might almost point as the worst game of the season for him.
Yeah, but that's a good point. He's one game removed from making 40-plus saves against one of the better teams in the East.
Certainly. I think I argued against myself with that statement. I don't even know what I'm trying to argue.
I think he'll rebound.
Like, I'm not worried.
He's, you know, if game two's a little rocky, then I do get worried, I think. But I'm willing to give him a mulligan for one game.
I will as well. And how about your highlight of the week?
In any other week, you know, a penalty shot in overtime to win would be
paper.
But it's hard to beat the Weiss goal, right?
It's Weiss, okay? Can you say it right?
It is. Dale
Weiss.
Dale Weiss. I always get that wrong.
Like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Weiss. You good? Say it.
Weiss.
Yeah, good job.
Did I get it?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, the Weiss goal, obviously.
Yeah, Rafael Diaz. Who needed that guy?
I kind of like that trade. I mean, it's obviously a fringe move. I'm not overreacting because of one goal in overtime, but
why not?
Let's overreact.
Rafael Diaz, worst player in Habs history. Dale Weiss, best. Guy Lafleur, you suck compared to Dale Weiss. Rafael Diaz, worst player ever. Worse than Douglas Murray. I'm done. You can bring sense back to the podcast.
Do you have a highlight? I assume it's the same. Or
yeah, I mean, I wrote down Gio's game winner because we were supposed to do it before Rob Ford fucked everything up. That was, and I still like, I can't because of the weight of the playoffs. I can't take anything away from what you know. Just Jesus, the whole overtime was ridiculous. So for whoever it was that would have knocked it in was clearly the highlight of the week. But you know, removing myself from game one and all the pressure that comes in that, I think. When all's said and done, the dramatics of Gianta scoring that one. I honestly had no faith in him scoring that goal, which is unfair, obviously, on the penalty shot. But that was a great moment, and I think a nice way to finish the season. I mean, can you ask for anything better? As Terrier said, I mean, how many times? It's so rare that, you know, your captain, who had just been awarded the award, the Jacques Beauchamp Award for being, like, the in-the-shadow star of the season... gets that shot in overtime and makes it, you know, makes it happen for the team, which at that point gave them home ice advantage. In the end, it didn't end up working out. But at that point, it was worth that. Yeah, I'll stick with the season
at home, scoreless game in front of a crazy crowd. It was a pretty cool moment.
It took the roof off the Bell Center. And so for that reason, I'll stick by Gio's game winner over the Weiss one, even though clearly the Weiss one, I mean, once you're in the playoffs, the value of everything goes up ridiculously. I've come down a little.
Which leaves us with our douche of the week.
It's hard to pick a douche this week.
Oh, no, it's not.
All right, you go first then, if you got one.
My douche of the week is a gentleman I had no idea existed 24 hours ago.
Okay.
But
it's your son.
Puckett with the passion of 1,000.
Oh, you came at him that fast. I wasn't ready to give him
Marchand? Nah. Lucic? Nah. They're all. I'm fine with all them. Cedric Puckett is my new public enemy number one.
Cedric Puckett. All right.
What a little fuck that guy is.
You know who's not enemy number one for me in Tampa Bay is the head coach there. He's a pretty likable fellow so far.
What's that?
Cooper. I like this guy.
Yeah, it's
unfortunately
a coach who knows what he's doing.
I guess that's what it is. I'm like, it's one of those things. I'm like, oh, I wish he was mine. I didn't come up with a douche. I'll be honest. I was in a good mood all week.
Hope Springs Eternal come round one.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the constant optimist. As anyone who's listened to this podcast knows. What are we calling this one? Not Hope Springs Eternal.
This is the Gary Batman Wet Dream.
Perfect. Can't wait. Thanks for listening. We got to get out of here because fucking late. How many OT games are we going to have to do? I'm concerned. Also,
how many have they played this season? This is their fourth already, I believe. So I think we could be in for a few.
They go late. I bought a 2-4 of Mill Street Organic. Not Mill Street Organic.
Good choice.
Mill Street something else, not the organic. Yeah. Whatever it is they sell in 2-4 in this province. Thought, this will last me round one. I have to go to the beer store before game two.
Very nice.
I mean, not myself, but I'm not that drunk at this point. I was sharing them with people, but I thought it'd last a little longer. Yeah, I didn't drink 24 beer by myself tonight.
Well, amateur.
I would have been even less cohesive than I was on this podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll get out of here. We'll probably be doing them with a little bit more frequency, but no promises when or where. It's all a guerrilla operation at this point. The playoffs could get interesting. Apologies for being late. Blame Hydro Ontario, or whatever it is they happen to be called. And we'll see you when we see you. Probably sometime this weekend. Thanks for listening. Say goodbye, Sean.
Tell me what to do.